Hello, neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Imke, your host. This is episode 20 of season 2. Just to bust the media facade of timelessness for a moment, I'm editing this show in early September 2021. It's the time of the year when farmers' markets in my hemisphere are entering that euphoric phase of the year, the time when the fruits of earlier labors are quite obvious on vines and fields and stalks, when folks are delighting in your product, and when the end of the unrelenting labor of the past is at least vaguely in sight. It's kind of like the time of life when parents are just about to launch their kids into the world fully prepared and highly celebrated, and when the upcoming decrease in labor is still just a sweet yearning. Well, maybe you think that metaphor is not entirely accurate, but ask someone who runs a farmer's market, or ask a parent, or better yet, ask someone who is both at the same time.
We did. We had the best year ever. It was huge for us. The idea of UPIC is that the guests do that piece of labor for you and they're rewarded by lower price per pound or whatever. And the way we were doing it, our guests weren't doing a good job. Awareness ebbs and flows. You know, in 2 or 3 years, this will all be folklore and we might just be right back where we started from. We were lucky that we somehow our lives over the years came together that we were able to have the kind of cash you need to buy into a farm.
Due to the vagaries of a pandemic, the timing of these episodes is a bit askew, so you've already met today's guest earlier in the season. Andy Wright has been around agriculture all of his life, growing up surrounded by dairy cattle and fruit orchards. After various fits of higher education, he took some time to be a United Church minister, a job that requires skill with humans and the ability to respond to ambiguity and despair with hope and resilience. Then for a spell, he worked within the government agricultural bureaucracy, a position that requires rather similar skills to that of the clergy. But now he helps to run Wright's family farm in Pasadena. No, not the California Pasadena, the one with the better weather, the one on the west coast of the island of Newfoundland. I spoke with him by Zoom earlier this season, even before his seeds were in the ground. Probably about last year this time, you had all kinds of plans about what your market would be like. How did that turn out?
So we came off 2 terrible years. In some ways, apparently, that's normal on a new business when they get to years 5, 6 in there. I don't know if they get complacent or they've used up all their own personal cash or whatever. But year 5 and 6 apparently are a bit harder. And so we did. We had an abysmal year in 2019. Bad enough that we subscribed to the business risk management programs available across the country. And it was bad enough that it actually kicked in for us in 2019. So looking ahead, you're right. We're looking forward to a great year. And looking behind, we're like, man, we really need one. And turns out we did. We had the best year ever. It was huge for us. And I think there were some factors for us too, because strawberries is our main product. If we don't have a good strawberry year, we just can't dig out of it. So we had a fantastic strawberry year. And I think part of it is because we finally learned some things about strawberries. And I let my fields get a bit stale. There were some fields that we'd picked 4 times. The production really dives after the second year. But somewhere I got in my head that longevity was important. And turns out it's not. And we spent a lot of time the last couple years just with plain old backbreaking manual weed control. And on our type of farm, you can't do weed control from a tractor. So we really dug into that and we had a tremendous strawberry crop. And because of COVID, we changed how we managed the fields a bit. Every goal I set, we made this year, except for raspberries. But it was a really good year for us. And we were able to work with what creation has dealt us this year. Mm-hmm. So we had this stay-at-home year, which brought more local traffic. But we had a Dominion strike in Newfoundland. The Dominion workers were on strike. So that meant that the other stores had extra pressure on them, but they also had reduced capacity. So why would you go to the local grocery store here in Pasadena and stand outside in line when you go to Wright's and not have to stand in line? We still had 1 person allowed in our little tiny market at a time, and then the masks after. So even with that, you didn't have to stand in line. So we had those factors, and the pandemic changed how people are eating and where they're sourcing their food, I think, as well. And, you know, one of the local websites on the Rock Recipes, had a huge explosion in the number of visits as people were cooking and people were buying larger quantities. This year we sold in our carrots, we sold way more 5 pound than 2 pound bags, partly because of labeling. We bought new 2 pound bags we were quite proud of, but people didn't recognize the logo. But also people were just buying bigger quantities. They were buying 5 pounds of stuff instead of two. So all those things contributed. Perennia in Nova Scotia did a thing one day with a grower, a new grower in PEI. Turns out they're just about the same size as us. So we sat in on that conversation and they talked about how they were going to operate their field. They're going to do it by appointment and that sort of thing, plus control. So every other row and a lot of other places, they use those little flags and mark your spot in the row, and which we've never done. So this was an excuse to implement that. Plus we spoke with, like-minded grower in the province and just kind of checked to see what they were thinking. And we sort of made up our mind what we were going to do. So we put one of our best people in the field and we used flags. But the way they came in and the way Derek was managing it, we managed to maintain social distancing and we used these flags and Derek, and it was actually very well received. It's been something I've been wanting to do, but I was just afraid the pushback was going to be horrible. So we just went with, our regular hours, but we controlled traffic in the field, which meant we had lineups out at the field, but not at the market. So you could maintain more space lined up laneway than you could right by the market. So most of the pickers were happy, and we got a way better pick of our fields. And the other good thing is there's always, everybody knows how to grow strawberries better than I do. And there was one guy sort of telling Derek all the things that he should do, he being me and all the shoulds. And Derek said, this is how good Derek is with people. He said, you've got a farm? Oh, no. Derek said, but you grew strawberries like on a commercial scale at some point? No. Derek said, well, do you think if all the things you were saying worked, that somebody would have tried it and decided whether it did work or not, and they would be doing it? Everybody just stopped. A really big success for us. It was a good thing that came out of this. So now hopefully, I don't expect it's going to change this summer. I think we're in this situation for a while. So it'll give us a second year to do that. And then hopefully people will expect it.
You sort of alluded to, you were wanting to do this anyways.
Yeah.
And the pandemic kind of gives you, everybody understands, oh yeah, they've got to do this now because of the pandemic. Some of those things have legs, like they'll still be with us post-pandemic, whenever that is or whatever that is.
Yeah, well, and for us, it's just better management of our field. I mean, the idea of UPIC is that the guests do that piece of labor for you and they're rewarded by lower price per pound or whatever. Yep. And the way we were doing it, our guests weren't doing a good job. So we sort of forced them to pick like a commercial picker would, inch by inch rather than, or foot by foot. And it worked out really well.
But sometimes consumers don't, well, they're not trained to pick. And so they leave a lot behind. Would you have to continually go through the rows and repick them?
So one of the misconceptions, certainly a misconception about our farm, I'm not sure it's a misconception for some of the really big strawberry farms, but everybody assumes that we pick through first and they get what's left. So yeah, the large commercial growers, they go through and take that king berry and maybe the secondary berries. That's why the grocery store berries are so big. And then they'll let you pickers in to, do the other half dozen berries that are left in each cluster later. But we don't do that. My philosophy is we are a you pick. So we grow them for you to pick. But we do go through and clean up sometimes. Certainly later in the season we will. And those berries are smaller. For us, it was more people stepping on them than us having to clean up behind. I mean, Newfoundlanders are proud berry pickers. And that's one of the ways I don't fit. Love growing them, hate picking them. I do. I hate picking berries. Love growing them, but I hate picking them.
That's why you have a U-pick, so somebody else does it for you.
And we had better control in our fields. For us, we got a better pick, and it was a better picking experience for the guests that come and pick. And they even told Derek that, like, wow, you should continue doing this, because, he would know what rows people have been in and where, and he could walk through and see. And it worked out really good. I don't want to say COVID was a blessing for us, because I don't think it was, but in spite of COVID, we had a good year.
Yeah.
Oh, another thing we did that we're going to continue to do, usually our pumpkin festival, we usually run it the first two weekends of October. And what we did this year to try and give more room for people to come is we opened the Friday afternoon before. And what we got was a whole bunch of moms and toddlers. Yeah. So I think we're going to continue to do that. You know, it wouldn't be quite so busy for the moms and toddlers, and they can come and something to do in October in an afternoon. And all in all, our pumpkin season sales wise came out equal to previous years. There'll be 10,000 pumpkin seeds planted this year.
10,000.
Yeah. Plus all the pumpkin relatives on top of that. So the cucumbers, yeah, and zucchini, squash, and gourds.
Is there a song, piece of music that I can use for this? Is there anything that sort of came up as you were in the fields this summer?
Well, last time we chatted, I said that farmer song, yep, Murray McLaughlin.
Murray McLaughlin.
And I said anything from Blue Rodeo. And in anticipation of this question, the song that I started paying attention to American politics.
That's a rabbit hole.
Yeah. So we won't go down it, except to say that the song that keeps playing in my head is Blue Rodeo, This Could Happen to You.
That's sobering.
Yeah. I'm sorry that I couldn't think of something else a little bit more light, but when you listen to the lyrics of that song, this could happen to you. Or you could wake up one day and say, I want to be a farmer, and this could happen to you.
They broke off the locks and they opened the doors, pushed out the windows and painted the floors, grew a little garden outside in the rust and sand, raised up the roof till it touched the sky, picked up the pieces that were left to die, brought this building back with a healing hand. When you see trouble, you're bound to move in on the double, cause you leave your mark upon everything. In your head, those liberty bells still ring. We know that you don't even mean a thing you say.
Traveled Canadian band Blue Rodeo with a bit of advice for all of us. All your bills come due, it could happen to you. These are the things that keep farmers up in the middle of the night. That song was requested by our guest today, Andy Wright, who farms and operates a market in Pasadena on the west coast of the island. Back to our chat from earlier this year.
You mentioned that there were quite a few new people or people who came by who hadn't been to the farm before. Can you speculate on why this year? Will they be back next year?
Yeah, I think they will. Yeah. So we are rebuilding the business. There's that normal business cycle where as a business matures, it sort of peaks and then comes off its peak as that generation starts to back off. So we bought an off-peak farm. I mean, it's no fault of theirs. I mean, it's just normal. And the staff that last year that Lohmann's had it did a really good job of telling everybody that it was closing. So, I mean, they didn't know that we were in the wings by it anyways. But so we've had to rebuild, and we're not known at this point for those fall vegetables, which are a huge deal here, the cabbage, turnip, potatoes. So that's where I think we're growing, is people are thinking of us now for cabbage, turnip, potatoes. They know us for carrots. Not very many people make a special trip out to our little market just for a bag of carrots. A few do. So I think that's part of it, is we're starting to be known a bit more for those vegetables. And just word is getting out. And one of the things we grow for August is lettuce. And in 2019, I sent a couple hundred heads, both iceberg and romaine to one of the local grocers. I call them the provincial grocer. And it went over really well. Beautiful lettuce. I mean, gee, it comes from our place to the grocery store within 3 or 4 hours. And so it's beautiful. And then it's gone within 2 or 3. So it's about as fresh as you could get. And nice big heads. And so I said, very good. I'm going to grow more. This year, I only got one shipment to that local grocer. Wasn't nearly the same amount as 2019. And the rest we sold ourselves right out of our market, you know, for twice the price. So I should clarify twice the price because we get the retail and the wholesale.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what direct farm marketing is about.
I mean, do you get a sense that people's attitudes about food have changed at all from this experience?
Yeah, I think they realize, this sounds silly to say, but they realize how dependent on it we are. But, you know, when there was all this toilet paper madness and flour and yeast, because everybody and their brother started making bread in Newfoundland, and that's a big thing here anyway. I think that was sort of a, I'm not using that catchphrase food security. I think it's a little overused and misused, and it means different things to different people. But I think there was a bit of a wake up to say, you know, where your food comes from is important. And I know even friends of ours, agriculture friends of ours, have a little feed store, and the number of chicks for meat birds and eggs skyrocketed this year. And I don't know what became of all those poor little birds, but they certainly sold a lot of feed for them too. Yeah. So that's a good thing.
Had you been selling to any restaurants? Had you been supplying any restaurants? Because that was a big change there early on, especially.
Very little, if any. It's one that is kind of fun to be a part of, especially because there is a bit of a food scene in Newfoundland. Like, it's not something I've pursued. It's a very small volume. A lot of places are getting all that stuff kind of pre-done already, like a salad or whatever.
It's all pre-cut.
Now, funny thing though, I went into the local Subway restaurant. Oops, there I said a brand name. And I went in. Went into a local sandwich shop, and the sandwich artist behind the counter, I was having my vegetable sub. I love veggie subs for some reason. And they didn't have any lettuce. And I said, oh, no lettuce. So I said, that's all right. I got some at home on the farm. And she said, some guy yelled at me today because I didn't have lettuce. And I said, what? She said, this was like a Sunday and the truck wasn't coming until the next day. I said, what? Really? Yeah, she said. And she was kind of feeling badly about, well, who wouldn't? And I said, after a minute, I thought about it and I said, would it be all right with you if I brought you a head of lettuce? And you don't have to pay me. I'll bring you two just so you got enough so that nobody else will yell at you. And so I did. Never turned into business. But so, the short answer is no, we've never really pursued the restaurant thing much.
So there's a lot of talk always in Newfoundland Labrador about berries and often talk about wild berries or cranberries or whatever, and trying to develop figure out the market on that. Sometimes it's a lot of secondary processing you need in order to get the money back. Is there a chance for more, like you say you sell some jam, but could you see if you wanted to increase production that would be an area you'd get into, the secondary production, the strawberry drinks, all that stuff?
We see a great opportunity in preserves, I guess. And so we did have a visit from a government representative that does food establishment licensing. So we have our food establishment license for our market. So Sharon did ask, and she said, yeah, everything you're doing right now is fine. And the other part of it is some of those things are family recipes, not so much the jam, you know, it's from the Certo package. You can't beat, you know. But for example, we do a relish, and it's called Grandma Anderson's Relish because it's Sharon's grandmother's recipe, and her family loves this recipe. I've never been a huge fan of homemade relish, but it's pretty good. It's really good with fish cakes, actually. So we kind of would want our stuff prepared the way we want it. So it would require, and we have a staff member now that would be awesome to do it for us. So that's one of the things that's holding us back, is we have the product, we have the market for it, like the demand for it. We'll finish the season with orders for a few dozen bottles of jam for this person and that person. That, no, it's no hurry. Just, you know, once we get it in November kind of thing, call me when you've got it. Yeah, there's a lot of potential for that. And I'd also like to explore more a bit on our carrots and processing carrots.
What are the sorts of things that people do in processing carrots?
Well, if you ever looked at the carrot information, it is a phenomenal. It's like only 10% of carrots actually go as bagged carrots.
Oh, really?
Or 15, or it's a really... The rest is for processing. So juice, I think, is... Now, we wouldn't do juice, but I'm thinking like baby cut carrots.
So this is where you create baby carrots out of a whole bunch of other larger carrots. Is that?
Now, most places, that's a specific variety that's long and slender with a really small core that are grown specifically for that purpose. This variety that is used, they get like 7 cuts out of each carrot. So, you know, it's like a 14-inch carrot. Then they're shaped. And
I think a lot of people think that they're just really tiny carrots and then they pick them.
Yeah, well, if you go to that particular big box store, there is baby carrots and they are just baby carrots. They still got the green top on. And so this year we ended up with a lot of child carrots, which are a little bit bigger than baby carrots.
Right, yeah.
We did set up to bag them off and sell them as, because there is a demand for our Wright's Family Farm carrots locally. So I think people would snatch them off the shelves even in that format.
Rodeo with It Could Happen to You. Today on Fit to Eat, I'm talking with Andy Wright of Wright's Family Farm in Pasadena. Farmers always have plans, and if one doesn't work out, they have a bunch more in their back pocket. I start out this section by asking Andy about some of his own plans and dreams for his market.
But we're also sort of working towards expanding our apple orchard and doing both sweet and hard ciders a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have a cider press of your own?
We do. Yeah.
You do. Okay.
Yeah. We did invest in a little cider press.
Great.
And we did make some one year and drank it all ourselves. And that year, Sharon also experimented a bit with the hard ciders. What we ran into is because we only have one variety of apples. So varietals are, unless it's like a Northern Spy or some of that, the flavor is kind of one-dimensional. There's no roundness to it. And so when we do plant apples, we're looking for various varieties that we can sort of blend together, get a little fuller flavor. But so much of our product we sell, we don't have any berries left to do stuff with. And even, you know, our apple production's been down because of a pest issue, and those all sell. And so there's not even apples left to make cider with.
So right, if you went into secondary production, you actually need more production.
Yes. Yeah. And it would be in that sort of unique, special stuff. I have this vision of ciders being available and also a nasty little local wine. I shouldn't say nasty, cheeky, a cheeky little local wine.
Cheeky. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That people say, oh, but it's from here. So we got to have that. You know, it'll be novel, right? Yeah. People say, oh, well, you know, it's from here. It's from Pasadena. We got to have that. And then some of our activities on our farm have become tradition for people. So coming to pick berries is tradition. Coming to our little pumpkin celebration is tradition. So I'm hoping that at some point these other things will become tradition. If we get a couple more good years under our belt, we'll be able to do some expansion in our retail side. I have some hopes and dreams there as well for Christmas time. Well, I don't know that we'll ever get into our own pies, but I would like to have in this dream of mine a little bakery.
Has COVID changed your optimism about the province growing more food in the future? Has this changed the game in any way? This drive to double food production, which started back in 2016, I guess it was. Do you see COVID playing a role in helping that? Or, I mean, I don't know if it's really on the agenda anymore.
I'm pretty sure it's on the agenda. I'm not sure that I 100% agree with the direction that they're going on that agenda, but okay. But I think COVID certainly, and I can't believe Newfoundlanders weren't aware of it to begin with, being as everything comes on those boats, but it certainly raised the awareness of the need for us to be able to produce more of our own food. And I know in like some of the federal provincial territorial agreements in this province anyway, they chose to focus on food producing agriculture rather than some of the other agriculture sectors, which caused some issues with those sectors. But it certainly certainly raised awareness, and I think awareness ebbs and flows. You know, in 2 or 3 years, this will all be folklore, and we might just be right back where we started from. But in the meantime, you know, there are some other things that inhibit growth here. The biggest part of the marketplace is located on the Avalon Peninsula, a long ways away. And our population is dispersed, which fighting COVID has been good, but normal course of things, it's pretty hard. Land availability, there's lots of empty land here, but is it suitable? Is the good stuff close to us? And for me personally, I would love to expand my farm even more. I'd love to do more, but we don't have the marketplace for the things I want to grow. That's the other thing. And accessing suitable land is hard. It's not affordable. So that's a challenge. And then I think all the other challenges are similar. You know, the cost to get started and the climate here is a bit of an issue. It's getting better, which is good for us, bad for everywhere else. Inputs and stuff, well, that's all coming from away, and land is what's holding us back. And getting a suitable return and all that stuff for the amount of work we do. In that sense, we're a typical farm. If you look at farm financials, labor, interest, and principal are the three biggest things. And then depreciation is usually close by, but that's not cash. So, you know, we have been paying a huge amount of interest. We pay a fair bit of principal, and we have a huge labor cost. And we employ 8 people this year. 6 of them are paid and 2 of us aren't. We were lucky that we somehow our lives over the years came together, that we were able to have the kind of cash you need to buy into a farm.
If one of your young workers next summer came to you and said, you know, Andy, I think I want to go into farming. Is there anything you'd tell them?
I would say, great. But I would encourage them. I would just want them to know that it's hard. Well, they know, working for us, they know it's hard work.
One of the issues that's front of mind for many farmers is succession planning. Now, to be clear, Andy is far too young to be asked questions about that. But somehow, as the conversation flowed, I kind of got around to whether Wright's family farm would have the same name in another generation. And like the fine, forthright soul that he is, Andy was happy to give me an answer.
I was to visit my daughter in November. So she works in PEI for the government at their lab, the Feed, Soils, and Milk Lab in Charlottetown. So we were talking about retirement because we were going out to this equipment dealer where her boyfriend's grandfather works, but he retired, but he's back again. And she said something about people not retiring. And I said, Jen, I said, I don't expect. I said, we'll never get out of that land, what we paid for it. I said, we'll just scale down and scale down and scale down, you know, till we're down to like 4 acres of strawberries and that's all me and mom do. And she said, oh, well, what if I want to come home someday? And I didn't literally, but figuratively, I just kind of grabbed the seat and said, don't get too excited. Play it cool, Dad. Play it cool. I told her, I said, that would be awesome. You know, I would love that. And when you feel that way, don't be afraid. Come and talk to us and we will figure something out. Their early years, they were around a small dairy farm near London, Sharon's father's farm. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, most of their growing up, other than sort of the policy administrative part of agriculture, wasn't a part of their life. And then all of a sudden we buy this place and they were both thrust into it for a couple or 3 summers and both enjoyed it in their own way. To hear Jen say that, that was kind of exciting for me. I don't know if they ever will.
I doubt there's very many farmers who wouldn't feel that same jump in their heart if they heard one of their kids say that, you know?
Yeah. So I would always encourage people to look at it, to certainly take a career in agriculture seriously, but it's not so simple as saying, I want to be a farmer. Education, I think, helps a lot, no matter what level of education you achieve. Yeah, I would definitely encourage someone, but they just need to be aware that it's a highly capitalized business.
Thanks, Andy.
You're welcome. It's always a pleasure, Ivan. I enjoy our chats.
I do, too. I'll just turn the recording off now, and then you can speak freely.
Oh, I was.
It often strikes me that this radio interviewing thing is a bit, well, self-indulgent. I mean, I get to chat with folks I like, people who do interesting things, people who, despite the challenges, grow food for folks like me. What is there not to like about that?
So this year we ended up with a lot of child carrots, which are a little bit bigger than baby carrots. Right. Or you could wake up one day and say, I want to be a farmer, and this could happen to you. I have this vision of ciders being available and also a nasty little local wine. I shouldn't say nasty, cheeky, a cheeky little local wine. Cheeky. Some of our activities on our farm have become tradition for people. So coming to pick berries is tradition. Coming to our little pumpkin celebration is tradition. So I'm hoping that at some point these other things will become tradition.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The song for today's show was It Could Happen to You by Canada's own supergroup, Blue Rodeo. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by another one of Canada's own, the powerhouse trad trio, the Lonesome Ace String Band. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
Everybody knows how to grow strawberries better than I do. Love growing them, hate picking them. I hate picking berries.